All right, this is Hacking 101. Hacking 201 is the one we do tomorrow at 10 o'clock, and if you're from out of state, you may not realize that you cannot buy alcohol in Georgia on Sunday, so if you want to drink, drink until you pass out in a pool of your own vomit tomorrow, donate generously. We will make a booze run tonight.
Well, a pool of someone else's vomit would be interesting, too.
It's all going to be beer.
I take preferences. Or request, rather.
Good beer.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yes. I have not seen Rattle here this year, which means he will not be in charge of the booze run, which means we will not have three cases of fucking Bud Ice Light this year. So, pardon my French. If there are any small children in the room, I apologize to their parents. Raise your hands, and I won't do it again. Okay, good. I can swear like a sailor then.
This is a not safe for work room.
Yeah,
be definitely. Prepared.
That's okay, we're not working. This guy's
going to
be my new best friend.
Okay. Oh, that looks good.
I see fireworks.
Oh, in addition to the beer fund, yes, it's a real cattle prod, $1 a hit. It's better than caffeine. Or if you prefer, Klingon sex toy. I swear to God, no joke, the first year I brought this to Dragon Con, I was wearing my minister outfit, and I had a sign that said, sin all you want, absolution guaranteed, $1 a hit, made $300 before the convention was over, and that was after I hit the dealer's room.
Stress? Trash?
Sorry, I have to fix it. You have to take a hit to get the absolution.
Say again?
You have to take a hit to get absolution with your dollar?
I'll just give you a hit if you want. I still want that dollar, though. Yeah, batteries aren't free. It feels like a bee sting for about half a second, and you go, and then it feels like
death.
Well, no,
up.
That's only if your heart stops, and that almost never happens.
Almost. Probabilities measured in some level of nines.
Low nines, or maybe a decimal point or two in front of that. Two decimal points? Maybe I mean zeros. I don't know.
Two decimal points? It's already working.
I'm going to drink more. Thank you. What? Oh, dear. Do I give it out or do I not give it out? Sure. What the hell? Science@DragonCon.org. I'm probably going to regret that, but there you go. That's the best way to get hold of me for DragonCon-related
stuff.
Where's
that site you subscribe to cool stuff from? Let's see.
What? Yes. Who? Huh? Okay. I can't hear you if you're not talking to a mic. Who's our mic bitch?
Mic runner?
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Get ready. Get prepared. I guess we've officially started.
I mean that in the non-prerogative sense, like as in the dog breeder female dog sense. No, you know, no
also, things are being recorded in here many different ways, so if you don't say anything, you're not willing to be responsible for.
Yeah.
This is not actually a panel about doing things illegally, except in the third-party sense, so don't ask us how to do something that's bad.
We will not teach you how to steal credit cards and buy stuff and have other people maybe pay for it.
Been there, done that. So anyway, we have to make sure we move on to the... I'm just kidding.
Wait a minute. Are you the guy who hacked my credit card 3 months ago? Okay.
Might have been an alias, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm really a paranoid person. I mean, really paranoid. I have no idea how these people in Spain got hold of my debit card number and bought lots of pornography with it, because I've never bought porn online. I used to work for the largest porn site web hosting facility in North America. I don't need to pay for porn. Plus, I got a girlfriend now. So, in Spain. Huh? Oh, dude.
Why?
The pay sucks, and the guys who own the place are assholes. You don't want to go there. I was ready to kill people after about a year and a half.
What's with the wall of sheep?
The internet is my porn stash, okay? If you can't buy free porn with Google or something, you're doing something wrong.
Don't make us pull up the internet is for porn, because we will.
Okay, we had a question about the wall of sheep. I'm with DC 404, which is the Atlanta chapter of DEF CON, which I see another member back here. The wall of sheep is from DEF CON Black Hat, and what they do is they operate an open wireless network, which we have one here. You're free to surf the net, have a good time. No, we're not. Unlike Black Hat and DEF CON, where you might as well just hand them your laptop and say, thanks, I had a great time, we're not going to hack your laptop. But what we wanted to demonstrate is just how easy it is to capture user IDs and passwords. And there are... No, it's right there in clear text. Okay, and as you can see, there's lots of stuff up. Now, this is today. Yesterday, we had 2 pages worth yesterday, too, and we didn't leave it on overnight, so who knows who in the hotel would hit it. But the idea is people do this all the time. You don't know who you're talking to when you talk to an access point. You have no clue. It could be an evil twin. It could be your neighbor. You don't know who's listening. Now, think if you go to the...
When you talk to an access point, you're talking to every other access point that access point has talked to.
Okay. Now, an example of what's going on here, for those who don't understand the technology.
Yeah, nice.
When you go to the grocery store and you decide to pay with your credit card and you hand the credit card to the cashier to swipe, that's relatively secure between you and that person. The person standing next to you doesn't get your credit card information. However, if I were to stand back and say, my credit card number is, everybody in line is going to hear that conversation. Well, that's exactly what's happening here. And we're using completely off-the-shelf open-source software for all of this. EtherCAP is what's sniffing the traffic, and automatically, no magic on my part, it's just a command line about 6 characters long, automatically pulls out all the passwords and presents them for you. The guy who generated the script, the PHP script, which you can get for free, is this guy, Iron Geek, down here. Oh, another one just passed up there. Iron Geek, he's the... Yeah.
All right, who's doing that?
Okay, all your ports all belong to us, apparently. So we thought what happened is we were talking about Scott was going to put up a wireless network, and Johnny and I were sitting around talking about it, and I says, hey, we should do a Wall of Sheep like they do at DEF CON.
I said, yeah, you should, because that way I won't be liable for it, but I'll get to appreciate and enjoy it.
And I had the fun of having never built one before of doing this from scratch. I mean, I took a computer, wiped the drive, and started from scratch. It took about 2 hours to actually configure everything and get it working, having no clue how to do it. Meaning, I'd say, how do I do that part? Google? Oh, okay. That's how easy it was. Now, I did have some help from the guys in DC 404. I posted and said, how should I do this? And I said, use EtherCAP. I said, oh, okay. And go to this guy's website and get a script. That was it. And that's all it takes to do this. So anybody can listen to this. Yeah.
Could you say the name of the software you're using to capture again, but slower for those of us who have different accents?
I have an accent? Okay. EtherCAP. E-T-T. Okay. ERCAP.
Oh, I have a comment about DEF CON 404. Does anyone go to the local 2600 meetings?
Besides me and you?
Yeah, anyone who sees the Atlanta meeting listed in 2600 magazine, the 404 meeting, go to DEF CON 404 instead. The Atlanta meetings are pretty much dead at the moment, and if you go to the 2600 meetings here in Atlanta, you'll probably be sitting in the Lenox Mall food court by yourself for a while. Yeah.
By the way, if you've never had a chance to actually go to Black Hat or DEF CON, the largest number of speakers from any local chapter is from the Atlanta chapter. So if you come to the DC 404 meetings, you're going to hear the same presentations practiced on you that they actually give at DEF CON and Black Hat. And they usually have a presentation virtually every week. So it's really, really good. And you get to meet other professionals in the industry and other hobbyists, people who just want to do it because. A lot of really cool people show up there. So the idea is whenever you talk across any network, wireless or otherwise, especially wireless, do it over a secure protocol. Use a VPN. Only use SSL, SSH. If you're going to do your mail, use HTTPS or POPS or IMAPS. So it's encrypted. Otherwise, all your mail belong to us. Yeah.
Is that an option you can set in a web browser to use secure stuff? Because I've got a VPN set up to my house, but I don't have any rerouting access to encrypt it and then rebroadcast it from my house to the internet, so you can't see anything.
No, that you'd have to install a router to do that. Basically, you'd have to create an endpoint that lets your what it would do is your VPN would make it look like your computer is actually sitting on your home network, and then your router, of course, would let you out to the internet. So it's as weird as this sounds, I could connect to the VPN over where I work, and what happens is, for all intents and purposes, I've got a really long wire running over to my network at work. I'm at work. All the traffic between here and there is encrypted going over somebody else's network, but for all intents and purposes, I'm at work. So you're going to actually look like you're coming from your home network going out.
Simple solution to that problem is just use something like LogMeIn, which uses a secure web browser, to connect to your remote desktop, and you've got full access to your system.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. It works from almost anywhere.
I'm not fully versed on VPNs, but the question is it when you make that VPN connection, but you already had an internet connection in the first place.
What do you mean, might?
Do you need to turn off the? How do you turn off your internet?
You can take that up with my girlfriend.
Using internet through your VPN as opposed to the
girlfriend.
Okay. The question is, if you're running a VPN, how do you turn that off for the people that aren't using the VPN?
Stop. Get off the internet. That's really
get off the internet. Here, think of it this way. Here's your router, and here's your little network with machines on it down here.
Poison.
Yeah. That's really weird looking. When you have a VPN, you've got your little VPN server here, right? When you connect in here, it makes it look like you just stuck another machine on here. So that connection goes out. These guys don't use the VPN.
Well, no. What I was getting at is, let's say I'm on my laptop here, and I connected it through their internet access no shell, and then I connect through VPN to my network at home.
So the question is if I wanted to use the internet through the VPN, how can I make sure it's going through the VPN as opposed to using the local internet from the hotel?
Okay, when you use a VPN, what you do is you bring up a VPN client, and what the client does is creates a secure tunnel to the VPN and essentially forces all traffic to go over the VPN connection. So at that point, you've created an encrypted tunnel over the hotel's network. None of the traffic escapes that tunnel because the VPN client makes sure that it doesn't get out of the tunnel. Everything on your laptop is going to go through the tunnel. Well, yes, you can. That's generally the default. One of the things you're talking about is, let's say I have a local printer I want to print to. Well, when you're on the VPN, you're on the other network, you can't see the local printer. So there is a way to turn on split tunneling, which allows you to still talk to the local devices. Well, when that happens, it is possible to leak information back to the local network. Right. By default, most VPN clients don't select that as an option. Who else? Somebody else over here had a question.
Is that a Wi-Fi network that you've got running right now?
Yeah, there's a Wi-Fi router over there. What is the name? It's like EFF.
EF Forum
or something. And we're using Clear WiMAX as the gateway, so that's how we're actually getting out to the internet.
What's the script software that's actually parsing all that out?
A guy by the name, it's irongeek.com or .org. Let me scroll down. He's the guy who wrote the script, and it's all the way down here at the bottom. Irongeek.com. If you go there, he's got the script up there. You can download it. In fact, he doesn't have a lot of bandwidth, so if you send him an email, he'll send you the password to download an ISO with all this pre-configured. Just boot your machine up and go.
This is the world's slowest IRC I've ever seen.
Would Tor protect your data from this?
If you tunnel everything through Tor, and that's if you do that, you have a lot more patience than I do.
Yeah, he's asking if Tor. Tor is the onion routing protocol, for those who don't know. And essentially what it does is makes although they've managed to crack it, method that they can't tell where the traffic's coming from the receiving end. However, that doesn't mean all the traffic from your machine to the Tor entry node is actually encrypted, unless you make it that way. So you can still leak information using Tor. You have to be careful how you use that.
Speaking of Tor, and How do you protect, and other similar tools, I know there's a few new ones out there, how do you protect from having the endpoint of your Tor tunnel be reading what it is
you can't.
That you're doing?
That's one of the vulnerabilities. But the object is that it goes through so many nodes that theoretically you wouldn't be able to tie the traffic back to you.
Yeah, now, that's sort of true.
Sort of true, I know.
Yeah.
The theory is. I said the theory is, didn't I?
And that means that I can't... Normally, if you talk to me, I say, oh, that's the machine talking to me. Well, here's the problem. In Tor, I talk to you. You're the entry node. You talk to that guy. He's in Bulgaria. Talks to this guy in China who talks to this exit node. He's in Chile who talks to the server. The problem is every machine talks to the next machine by re-encrypting the data. So all that you know is that he talked to you. You don't know what's in the traffic or where it came from. So once you do a couple of hops, there's no way to know where it came from. However, if when it comes out on the other end, it has all the browser information, it says, my user ID is this, my real home IP is this, and it's leaking that information, it is possible for people to sniff the other end and say, oh, I know who's doing that. Tor is the onion routing protocol. EFF helped develop it.
Tor.eff.org, I think.
Okay, so on that thought, I know I can use Tor to hide myself from basically the rest of the internet, but where I'm connected through, let's say Comcast, for example, they're still going to know who I am, even with Tor, right?
Yes.
Is there any way to hide yourself from Comcast?
Don't use Comcast.
That's why you should really use. For instance, if you really want to do that, you can put a use HTTPS, use SSL or SSH into the entry node. At that point, all they know is you're talking to a Tor entry node, and they can't read the traffic. They have no idea what the contents are, and so at that point, you're pretty much anonymous, more or less.
In theory.
In theory, yeah.
My favorite words.
So this, we've been letting this run. Yesterday, we had 2 pages worth, and today, what? Wall of feet. Yes, there you go. FAQ, there you go. Total fart. That's funny. This is keep tweeting. This is awesome. This is our version of tweet.
World's slowest version of tweet.
So, any more questions about Wall of Sheep? And we did it just because we wanted to demonstrate people have no clue.
Tuttles? Who's Tuttle?
Yeah. Yeah, it's.
Who's Tuttle and where are they liked?
Like, I like Tuttles.
Tuttles.
I don't know.
Somebody named Tuttle want to step up? Anybody, because apparently there's somebody that likes Tuttle.
Somebody has a crush on you. I think it's that 600-pound guy in the back there with the
someone else
dressed like a hobbit. So if there's no more questions on Wall Street, we did this to demonstrate just how unsafe you are, and you don't know who's listening. Now, we happen to put it up here to say, you might want to change your password and pay attention. What really should make you afraid is the guy sitting out there in the lobby right now with his laptop in his lap, sniffing the traffic, capturing this, and not telling you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you got to worry about. Yes. Yes. Thank you. That's called an evil twin. Basic Wi-Fi. You're an access point at Starbucks. I connect to you. The way the protocol works is once I'm connected to you, you can send what's called a disassociate packet that says, get off my net. Well, that's normally sent by the access point. Well, there's no authentication. He could just as easily say, get off my network, and I would accept it thinking it's you. But it's not. So what happens is once you kick me off some number of times, I don't know what the number is, I automatically, by the protocol, say, fine, I'll go look for you on another channel. And I start searching the other channels, looking for this same access point, same configuration. You have already set yourself up to look just like this one. Says Starbucks and everything. And when I find you, I connect to you, and you immediately connect back to them. You're now in the middle. You can edit, modify, read all the traffic, now going to him. So when you go to Starbucks, you don't know who you're talking to. If I use a VPN, oh well, he's out of luck. Hacker gets nothing. So I highly recommend you use VPNs if at all possible. Use secure protocols, SSH, HTTPS, Secure POP or Secure IMAP. Now off to the real guys.
Well, that was good. No, very good. Thank you. Did you actually introduce yourself? Did we get that far?
I got a sign there.
Okay, I have a cosign.
Okay.
I got a loan.
I secant that.
I'm Johnny X. I run the science track, and I've
I kind of helped put together a lot of the EFF track stuff, including the Hacking 101, 201, and 301 stuff. God, how long have we been doing this? 12 years now?
Long time.
Yeah, originally it was just a way to get into DragonCon for free. Yay, social engineering. So, yeah. I was involved with the Nashville 2600 chapter, and if any of you have been to Freaknik up in Nashville, HackerCon up there, I started with a bunch of other people, too. So, InnerZone, we kind of don't like to talk about that a whole lot. That was a grand failure, but OuterZone grew out of it. So, yeah, it was.
It was interesting.
It was fun. I wasn't running that convention, so my conscience is clear.
He says he thinks you need something stronger than beer. I think he needs a spell checker.
I think spell checkers have probably ruined most of us.
Need something weaker than beer.
Yeah.
That's good. I gotta remember that one.
Sick humor, you're in the right place.
What's the difference between unloading a truckload of dead babies and a truckload of bowling balls?
You can't use a pitchfork on the bowling ball.
There you go. Okay, I think the way this works is you have questions and we pretend to have answers.
Or we make stuff up.
Or we make stuff up. If you call us on that, then goody for you. We'll give you a beer at Hacking 201.
We have a taker.
I just want to know if you guys will talk about the Net Neutrality Act at all, because your 2600 is the one that introduced me to it, and any changes on it at all?
Beats the hell out of me.
I went to the first session here at EFF Track, the very first one at 10 o'clock Friday, and that's exactly one of the things we talked about. They talked about what the Obama administration is doing.
That was now, 1 o'clock.
Huh?
That was 1 o'clock, not 10.
It had a 1 and a 0 in it, okay?
Yeah.
I was
there, and it was 1 o'clock. I'm really sure I was there. I was sitting right here.
Have more to drink. Anyway, we had a session.
10 o'clock Pacific.
And the whole thing about it was he's very pro-net neutrality. And the question is, who's got the booze?
Hit him.
Whoever had the bottle, he wants a refill. Oh, there he is. So
we got a pirate.
The whole idea is that the current administration has said they're very pro net neutrality. They haven't actually done anything to actually make that happen and ensure that it stays that way.
The FCC chair, though, has come out in favor of net neutrality, right? Wasn't that real recent?
Yeah. In fact, he's a pro net neutrality guy, the guy they appointed for FCC.
That's a good point. Just so y'all know, when asking questions, he's the hardcore tech guy, and I'm the social engineer, and actually I kind of hate computers these days. So.
Me too, but for different reasons, I guess.
Yeah.
As far as net neutrality, isn't the net currently neutral?
No.
Depends.
No, Comcast has bandwidth. Hold on a second there. Should we
bring everybody to page? I mean,
say again?
Should we describe what net neutrality is? Because we're apparently having disagreements about that already.
Yeah, I'll let you do that. Go for it. Yeah,
so
I might learn something.
Net neutrality comes into play when the company that owns the last mile to your house, be it cable or fiber or whatever, is also a content provider. In other words, they're wearing two hats. Like, let's say Comcast in my area, because I'm really familiar with this. Comcast is both my net provider. They provide cable into my house. But they're also a voice over IP provider. They provide a telephone service. Now, in the absence of rulings and regulations about net neutrality, they could make it so that the packets that travel to my house that belong to their VoIP service get through just fine, or maybe even better than the porn I'm downloading. Okay? But they might block Vonage or third-party voice over IP clients to reduce the competition. So, or they might just slow it down enough to make it really annoying or drop random packets so I think it's Vonage's fault instead of just not working at all. So the problem is when we have a conflict between the last mile provider wearing one hat and content providers wearing the other hat. Another example of this, and this is actually in play now, is that Comcast introduced about, I think, a year ago, a 250 gigabyte cap on what you could download in 1 month. And I think actually for new customers, even less than that, but for legacy customers, it's 250 gig. Now, they also, the content provider called Comcast, wearing a different hat but the same brand, has started providing video downloads on demand, digital downloads, so you could watch them on your laptop or desktop or whatever. Now, the 250 gig doesn't apply to movies purchased through Comcast's download service. But it does apply if I want to download it, say, from Netflix or stream from Netflix or stream from Hulu. So in other words, again, by having, and this is real, this is actually in place now, so if net neutrality regulations come in, Comcast is going to have to stop doing this. They're going to have to treat the Comcast-wearing hat of a content provider identical to all other content providers, or it's not neutral, hence the word.
And there are some, pretty heavy players online who really have a vested interest in net neutrality, and that would be Amazon, eBay, Google. They want to make sure that
they can sell their stuff.
Yeah, and like Comcast and the rest of them, the network transport guys, they actually want to be able to bill not just you for the service they provide you, but they also want to be able to double bill Google and Amazon and eBay, saying, well, if you want priority through our network, then you're going to have to pay us extra for this. Otherwise, we're going to deprioritize your traffic, or we may even make it so that most people can't get through, which means that our Comcast, you know, for Comcast, for instance, please, if there are any Comcast lawyers out there, I'm just using this as a hypothetical example. I'm not saying you're doing this.
Blame it on me. I brought it up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. If you're evil Comcast, for instance, you might have your own auction site and your own search engine set up. And unless you want to pay us a little extra money, Google or eBay, something nasty might just happen to those packets of yours, you know?
And a more subtle level, Comcast could, for example, sniff my web traffic and add ads for Comcast advertisers on the top of a Google search, or even replace Google's ads with their own. I mean, this is nasty. This is the kind of... See, so
they'll actually take the content and then put ads above and below the actual page that you're viewing.
Yeah, so this is what we got to watch out for, right?
The one they're using in England's called Form. I think Comcast is already messing around, because ever since they've had their phone service, my Vonage gets worse every month. Mm-hmm. And as far as Obama being for network neutrality, he and his administration introduced a bill last week that if the bill passes, if the president considers it an emergency, he can shut down any company's connection to the internet.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
There are real passwords and usernames coming up here now, by the way. I see FirePair. Whoever FirePair is, change your password.
FirePair was up there earlier.
We've been kind of nice.
Yep.
I only emailed one person. Yeah. I gave up on it after that. Yeah. He never got back.
So we're a little bit nice.
What have you got against Boba Fett?
First, you got to spell it right if you're going to make some claim about it.
I know what he means.
Come on now.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, it can't be Boba Fett was a sissy. Boba Fett isn't real.
But there's just no way to open the door from the outside.
What? Is there a question?
Is there a question out there?
Yeah. The question is that, you know, net neutrality exists in America, but it's a very common problem in European countries that they're giving it up. London has already fallen, and most of Europe is going that direction. Is there any way we can have a fail-safe on that?
What does fail-safe mean? We blow them all up if they don't agree? Why?
That's kind of what I was thinking. Yeah, we got
hey,
news.
Totally. No, seriously, though, there's this problem where if, you know, enough countries follow suit, eventually it'll happen here, because there's nobody to stand up and say it's wrong.
No, we started this country 200 and mumble years ago by being different. So I don't think it would just all fall. I don't think there'd be any real reason that we would have to pick the same rule everybody else does.
We haven't started listening to the rest of the world now. Why should we start?
Yeah, we're sort of telling them, mostly.
And... seriously, handwritten letter to your congressman and senator. Actual physical letters, they do take a hell of a lot more seriously than they do phone calls and emails. So,
yep.
It helps. Also support things like the campaign finance reform, and take a lot of the legalized bribe, i.e. soft money, out of politics, and that'll help a lot of it too, because then corporations will have a much tougher time buying our representatives.
Well,
on a
on a somewhat related issue, just a couple months ago, I opted out of the DNS hijacking that Comcast is doing, where if you put in a URL that instead of sending back the 404, you get the Comcast ad page.
Yeah. I was going to try not to bring that up, but yeah, definitely a problem, too.
Isn't that Comcastic?
Yes.
I know. Where's our RFC standards?
I love that Comcast ad they had a couple of years ago. Actually, I used to have to power Comcast.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Okay, hold on.
The red shirt guy.
Uh-oh, you're wearing a red shirt to a sock fight. Yeah, you're looking at his
He's gone. He's gone.
So,
yeah.
Well, with all this problem with our ISPs, I was about to change to Clear, but I read their terms of service, and they were just as big telco as Comcast or AT&T.
Yep.
How do you go about setting up? Last year, you guys mentioned something about a community ISP. How can you go about doing that?
It's a lot of work because the big guys have got a very vested interest in keeping that from happening. Some places have got, they've been able to get through the people who participate in it, usually like it. Other places, municipalities have passed regulations to specifically prohibit that type of thing from happening. It's really going to need to be challenged in court and possibly make it all the way to Supreme Court to set a precedent to see what's going to happen with it.
Well, that's not, I don't know about prohibiting.
I'd like to point out that if you, at least with my ISP, once you opt out of the ad-sponsored name servers, the name servers fail about 50% of the time. That's all I had to add.
Yeah, there are a lot of public name servers out there. You know what? That man right there, he should probably be sitting on the panel with
us. Yeah, right. Come on up. We got space.
Come on.
Okay. Really? Let's ask him questions. Then.
That's Strick. Strick is a cool guy. He knows a lot of stuff.
Stuff, man. Dude.
He's got the stuff.
Got stuff.
A really common technique we hear about is...
The right stuff.
All right, sorry.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
A really common technique we hear a lot about is buffer underrun or buffer overrun. Could you explain a little bit how you can determine what inputs are vulnerable and how you can exploit that?
Usually there's tools that just try really random crap against things. And if you ever can run against a program and you get abnormal behavior like a core dump, you know there's a vulnerability there, and it's just a matter of reverse engineering it to figure out exactly why that particular byte length and that particular combination of things finally hit the whatever buffer length it was. But yeah, I've actually seen a tool in Perl, which is why I know about this. It actually rams random arguments at command lines and tries to get things to happen.
Science Track is doing a talk on quantum encryption for whoever posted that. I believe it's sometime tomorrow. Check your program schedule, pocket program.
Who's Stephanie Ming?
Yeah. Oh, Stephen and do a search for data fuzzer. Yeah. That's the term for that type of software.
Sorry?
Stephen Fleming does a lot of stuff at Georgia Tech. I'll talk to him about that. He gets funding for a lot of startups, and yeah, he should know better than that.
It's interesting. I was on a cruise a few years ago, and one of the talks was by who's the guy out of Seattle does a lot of Mac conversations and network stuff. Anyway, so he's on the cruise, and he's talking about network security. And I'd been running my sniffer around the open Wi-Fi that we set up on the cruise ship and had grabbed his password at least four or five times. So I sat in the back of the room when he got to that particular talk. He says, always use encryption. And I say, you mean like when you're on a cruise ship and you're using an open Wi-Fi port and maybe your password starts with a 3 and ends with an exclamation mark? And he goes, oh, yeah, okay. Randall, maybe you should be giving this talk. Yeah, it was pretty funny. Some expert. I won't mention his name, but if you go back about 3 years of Geek Cruises, he'll be one of the guys listed.
I just wanted to say on the community net thing, the city of Wilson, North Carolina, no, I don't live there, you guys could possibly get in touch with the people that are running Greenlight because they have done a community wireless. It's not free for the community, but they are basically running speeds that compare to Verizon Fios, and they are fighting off Time Warner Cable with legal lawsuits to keep themselves from being shut down. So you might be able to get in contact with the people that are running. It's called Greenlight, and ask them sort of some of how they managed to pull this off and how they managed to fend off Time Warner Cable and a few other rather big players' lawsuits against them. because they had to do it. In fact, just recently they managed to keep legislation from being passed that would shut them down. So just people that have done it, so you might want to talk to them. I know it took a lot of money.
One of the things, just to refer back to the question from the back of the room earlier, if you go to a web form and one of the input fields is spec to be a maximum size of 50 characters, you can bet the programmer will break something at 51. So that's a good clue. Go in and see what the max sizes are and then force something that's longer than that. Usually significantly longer, but at least a little bit longer. It's kind of fun. I've heard it is. It's fun. Yeah.
We need to return this, apparently.
Yeah. Okay. Take it back. Thank you. This is more than enough now. I'll be on the floor any moment now, I'm pretty sure.
Thanks.
Well, net.
What?
Can I?
Yeah.
Net neutrality is.
Sorry, where?
Well, net neutrality is obviously very important. If there is legislation on this, will we see any long-term hindrance with a legal block on the ability to prioritize packets? I mean, will there be a cost in the development?
It's not a matter of, I mean, packets will still need to be prioritized. What we're just going to try to take away is the company bias. If you're going to do VoIP, do VoIP. If you're going to do, low-grade, non-real-time streams like downloads and things, then it'll be applied across the board under a net neutrality rule.
I had a question. I work for a very large computer firm, and they've just enabled a lot of restrictions around certain cell phones. So my question's around hacking and cell phones, and it was like specific phones like the iPhone, for example, have been banned because of it allowing vulnerabilities or having hackers getting into the Exchange server. And I'm trying to understand, I didn't realize you could hack through a cell phone, and why are companies like IBM and HP so concerned about cell phones and employees at using the Exchange server that's on the corporate server, which of course has all the firewalls, and then excluding certain phones? I don't really understand.
One of the problems is that we're making smarter and smarter phones. So instead of it just having really dumb functions of call up the cell tower, handle the handoff, you know, open up the audio path, everything like that, these things, you know, my iPhone is running OS X, just a small version of it. So vulnerabilities that are common between the OS X desktop and the OS X on the phone can be exploited. And they're and because the iPhone update cycle is not as fast as OS X desktop, because there could be a new thing pushed out tomorrow for OS X desktop, it takes a lot of time to really update the iPhone stuff going out. Although they're pretty fast to react to some things. That means there's potential vulnerabilities. I mean, the whole jailbreaking was done because there are vulnerabilities in the iPhone. We couldn't jailbreak a phone unless somebody screwed up, and thank God they screwed up. But that's also true for the Android. That's why the Android's crackable and so on. All these smartphones have holes. And so I can see an IT department being concerned about that kind of broken phone. It's no worse than someone bringing in their home laptop.
Yeah, it's not a small phone anymore. You've got a small computer that just happens to have some phone-like functions built into it along with everything else. If you want to be able to use your cell phone, get the cheapest, lowest-tech, oldest, almost obsolete cell phone you can. This thing dials phone numbers, and that's it. There's no camera. There's no anything else in it. That's fine. I don't want that stuff. I just want to be able to call somebody and connect, hopefully.
This is another technical question. Say you got a new game, and you're having fun with your game, you've been playing for a while, but you decide your character's way too underpowered. If you want to go through and, this is totally local, nothing server-side, let's say you want to go through and adjust your character's stats in the single player, how would you go about determining the best way of, like, I mean, obviously with the hex editor, how would you decide where to edit, what to edit?
Well, if they're not scrambling and encrypting, which for all modern games are, but earlier, in the old days, they would write a save file of some kind. And what people would do is they would save a save file, then they'd play the game just a little bit, just enough to change one number. and they'd dump another save file. And they would compare the two and go, oh, so when my hit points went from 16 to 17, this byte changed from FE to FF. And through that, they're able to get editors eventually worked out to say, well, I can change that to D7 and get like all sorts of hit points or whatever, right? So it's a matter of comparing save files, if knowing that you have access to those at some point.
Any particular game?
Oh, no, it's just a game like the old Diablo 2, for example.
Yeah.
If you make it up to Freak... If you make it up to Freaknik this year, you want to talk to Dagmar and Flip. And
God, but not about games, just talk to them. They're kind of cool.
No, you want to talk to them about games. game hacking, that's what they do, game okay. hacking.
Duke Nukem 3D had an INI file you could edit, and then you could get all kinds of cool stuff. Going back before his question, I thought Mac's claim to fame was that they didn't have holes.
No, they have fewer holes. Fewer holes. The problem is that a lot of the Mac software is also standard off-the-shelf open-source software, and when vulnerabilities are found, they affect everything across the board, Linux, Mac, and any of those that are ported to Windows and stuff like that, so it really affects everything across the board. Most of the vulnerabilities were not ones who created in Cupertino. They're stuff that's coming from third-party sources.
Has anyone looked at that image yet? Because there's no way in hell I'm going to. I am kind of curious.
Squirtle.
That's tame. That's nothing. I still sometimes have flashbacks to my first exposure to Tub Girl. And
Goatsy.
I didn't realize that the hosting company I was working for at the time was actually hosting TubGirl.com. Yeah. National-net.com. They host a large portion of this hemisphere's pornography these days.
By the way, anybody didn't recognize that was an attempted hack of a web page.
Yeah.
They were trying to get it to actually display that graphic. Nice job.
Looks like it's properly escaped. I wonder if it's escaping a less than with a high bit set. Anybody want to try?
All right. For the panelists, does
all
it bother
two of us.
You? Yes, all two of you. Does it bother you when people refer to malicious hacking as hacking?
Yep.
Yeah, because it certainly bothers me. I'd like to hear cracking used more often in the media.
You know, that's pushing water uphill.
It's a lost...
The cow has left the shed.
Yeah. It's a lost battle. We, in fact, started Freaknik up in Nashville in an attempt... it was an honest attempt, but a stupid one, to try to reclaim the name hacker and the original old-school non-criminal sense of the word. And we did manage to actually convince the local newspaper guy who'd been writing articles about I hate hackers and they should all go to jail, blah, blah, blah. Actually got him to come to Freaknik, and he had a blast. And for the next 3 years, we were the top technology convention in Middle Tennessee. So we won that battle, but we lost the war. Oh, well.
You know, there's a lot of other battles that are worth fighting. That one's just gone.
Okay.
The meme is out there. There's nothing you can do about it.
Okay, I have a question. All right, so I work for another large network software company. And no, it is not the one on my bag, if anybody looks. So at least where I work, I know that a lot of our security bugs we don't release info on in this futile, feeble attempt for people not to find out about them. And my question is, do you guys have any resources or places where you find out about holes and things? Now, I'm not going to ask, you know, how you find out where to use them.
Exactly.
And the other one, what's the other one I'm reading all the time? But yeah, some security list, right?
TRAQ.
But there's day zero day.
Yeah, it's bug track. Is BUGTRAQ. Who was it?
Anyone know who Mike Lynn is? How many of you? Cisco hacker from Black Hat 2005. He demonstrated what at the time was referred to the Holy Grail, which was remote code execution on Cisco routers, and talked about the potential for a Cisco router virus, which would be able to take down about, at that time, 90% of the internet in about 15 minutes. And since the really, really expensive Cisco routers, their version of the BIOS with their version of the firmware on there, it's not a socketed chip, it's soldered straight into the main board. If you have a Cisco router virus that goes out and infects all of its neighbors, and it's really easy to find the neighbors because they're in the routing table, And then after you've infected everyone around you, the last thing you do is overwrite the firmware with junk and then tell the router to reboot. Yeah, that would be a really bad problem because most of the internet would be down and there would really be no place you could download upgrades to fix this because the internet is down and things have to be physically shipped to people to replace these $50,000 mainboards in these core routers. And how are you going to do that? Because most of the internet is down, and therefore UPS and FedEx and DHL and the rest of them are going to have a hard time tracking. Most of the phone network is down. A lot of the banking network is down. So, yeah, this was some pretty hardcore stuff that Mike had discovered, and Cisco did not really want him talking about it, which is why they sued his ass off when
just
ass. He got it back, but they sued his ass off when he talked about it at Black Hat 2005. So
it's not even my donkey.
Yeah. Cost them a significant portion of market share, apparently, because now they no longer control 90% of the market. And Juniper, they hired him so fast and said, we want you to go through our code. Also, the military guys were very, very, very upset with Cisco for not disclosing this information to them because Mike and his research also found out that the Chinese were working on this, too, and that would have left military networks vulnerable. And so, yeah, Mike's got a lot of friends in the military now. They fly him to the Pentagon pretty regularly.
The other list...
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
The other list that I was thinking about, sorry.
So this is why just hiding bugs is not a good thing, because there can be some pretty damn severe implications there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and unfortunately, we're kind of going that way. I mean, I like Linux and BSD and everything, and they are gaining market share and, you know, Mac OS X, BSD based, and but yeah, I agree with you. Diversity is a good thing, but we've lost a lot of that, and we seem to be continuing to do so.
Write your own kernels.
There you go. The other list I was thinking of. Yeah.
But it's going to take them a hell of a long time to find the bugs because the common exploits aren't going to work.
Yeah. The other list I was thinking of. Yeah.
It would be a good thing.
When I was talking about bug tracker, the list I couldn't remember the name of is Full Disclosure. It's a lot more volume in terms of both signal and noise. You got to wade through it a bit, but a lot of zero-day stuff ends up in there. It's real, like, you know, and much quicker than it would show up in BugTrack.
One thing that I'd like to ask about is there any way we can go and try to educate the public on the whole virus Trojan thing? Everybody, every time something comes out now, it's called a virus, and I'm getting absolutely tired of it because nobody seems to understand the difference between a virus.
Talk to your local news critters, you know. Tell them this isn't the phrase for it. You know, it's up to us to educate the media. There's really nothing else we can do.
Dude, the last Science Track panel I did, it came out that apparently a lot of not just Georgia State but Georgia Tech university students were having problems with converting English to metric and back again. And if people are going to have problems with the metric system base 10, and these are supposedly really educated people, you're going to try to get Joe Schmo out there to understand the difference between a virus and a Trojan?
Heck, tech support can't even tell the difference between $0.02 and $0.02 per kilobyte.
God. Yeah. Whoa.
One other question. Incidentally, speaking of online multiplayer games, if we were to want to, say, intercept some traffic and attempt to tweak some data, would that be at all possible, or how would we even look into that? Well, I'm sure it has been.
It's been done, but the reaction is that they start encrypting, you know, that sort of data so that it doesn't affect. It's not as easy to do anyway. You have to get it back at the source then.
Hey, let me give you an example for that. In World of Warcraft, at least a few months ago, you were able to decrypt all of the traffic. You didn't need to know the key. They had this really great SRP encryption handshake that they do, but then the actual encryption itself is just like XOR. And it's XOR with a 6-byte key.
Woohoo!
It's like something really ridiculous. So, don't trust credit card info to online game sessions. That kind of stuff would be insane.
And the password's always 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
That's the same.
Have you been hacking my luggage again?
Yeah, we had an
change it to 1, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Oh.
Yeah.
We had an instance. One of the air conditioning units in the machine room went squirrely, and we walked over to it, and, of course, it was the new digital one, so it had a password. And so the machine room administrator started walking away. He says, "Oh, I'll have to call the emergency number." They didn't even get to the machine room door, and I'd already cracked into it. So, yeah, 1234. That was the password.
Wow. Woohoo! So secure.
All right. Going back to the black hat function you were talking about, what then is the most effective way of bringing those bugs and exploits to light without getting yourself arrested and without, like,
having... Oh, don't ask me.
And, like, not
I'm really the wrong,
to go
but you've got to take this. Like, I can't cover this.
If you don't have the chutzpah to actually go to the conference and talk and you're not, like, a big name or something, you happen to come across one of these things, what's the best way to actually show them that their code is exploitable without... being arrested for cracking their system?
Make up a throwaway ID and post the information to Bug Tracker somewhere else from some place that is not your home. And preferably, you know, if you're really, really super paranoid, which you probably should be, do it using a really cheap wireless network card, which you're not going to use again afterwards, so you don't have to worry about the MAC address.
Or learn how to change your MAC address.
Hmm?
Learn how to change your MAC address.
That too.
They aren't on my machine, I know.
This question actually is addressed to both of you. What was the biggest challenge you faced when you first started hacking, cracking, whatever term you'd like to use, and how did you get by it?
Challenge. I think paying for all the lawyers.
For me, I think... he's definitely got me beat on that.
$270,000.
Yeah, as I said, I'm more the social engineering type. So I guess the biggest challenge for me was actually being able to basically get Freaknik going, not get busted, run the whole thing as a donation con for 5 years. You know, don't have to pay admission. It's whatever you feel it's worth. You know, donation bucket here. Not lose any money, not go to jail, not have anyone die from alcohol poisoning, I guess. And just, you know, to set the record straight, I was one of the people who started Freaknik, but it was not me alone. There is a damn good crew of people up in Nashville who still keep it going. It is very much a community effort. One person cannot do it by themselves. So credit where credit's due.
Next.
Mm-hmm.
Next victim.
Okay, so suppose I am writing a program or putting together a network or what have you.
What do you want?
And I want to hire someone to test it, to find vulnerabilities, and I want it so that way I can be sure this thing is good to go. Are there services you would recommend? Does that sort of thing exist?
Yes, it exists. I don't know that I'd have anything particular to recommend for you, but you can use traditional ways of finding contractors and consultants to find people who are experts in security breaking, tiger teams, that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's quite a number of them actually come to the DC 404 meetings here in Atlanta who are professional pen testers. So that's one way of actually talking to them, meeting them.
I have to say that I think that whoever posted that link and tried to get that actually probably broke the program because it doesn't appear to be working anymore.
That's not what broke it, but yeah, it was right after that.
Yeah.
Oh,
oh. Ooh, yeah. Yeah.
I was wondering why I wasn't seeing any more funny updates.
So I'm going to have to hack my own program back? Okay.
Just restart, maybe reload the web page. Oh ho! See, my idea about high bit worked. Ah, see. In its last dying gasp.
I see what happened. He killed
the
air cap. Very good. That was
nice. I'll have to remember that exploit later. It might come in handy.
Who did that? Hand up. What? Who did it? Which one?
Beck.
No, I'm asking, what do you want for Hacking 201, booze-wise? Oh, well, we can get you a variety of highly caffeinated drinks.
Joel.
Okay. We've got some Balls Geek beer. How about that?
I like that.
Okay.
Cool. Who has the microphone now? Who are we talking to? Oh, he's got the mic. No wonder.
I'm going to hack
So, I work for a very large electronics retailer in the United States. And the division I work for rhymes with sheep pod.
Hey, yeah. You've got a job, which is better than a lot of people in this economy, so more power to you.
Yes, and holding on to that job is actually very difficult where I'm from. I think my question is, in educating customers, and I try and actually do a good job. I'm outside of what I do with Geek Squad. Oops.
We're speaking hypothetically.
Yeah, hypothetically.
For a group
or
like
Nerd Herd, sorry.
Yes, Nerd Herd, okay.
So outside of what I do for Sheep Pod, I work as a security consultant, and I also work as a hardware consultant with other customers with businesses locally. I try and educate my customers on security, but I've not yet figured out a good way, a way to basically handle it and say, you're not safe, you're never safe, this is how safe you are not, you know, or how unsafe you are. How do you broach this with people without scaring them completely away from technology?
Maybe they should be scared away from technology.
I don't disagree.
One person.
I don't disagree. I don't.
Some people don't, but you know, stuff. I mean, this is a real blatant example that gets in everybody's face. But it's that kind of demo, that kind of understanding, or even just walking through the basics of how the password's being passed in the clear on a lot of the things they're using. I really broke it, didn't we?
So
I don't know.
What level of education are you talking about? Like getting through to grandma or someone who's a little bit more technically inclined?
And how much time do you have with a customer? That's the other problem, right?
A lot of times I can have as much time as I want. I'm in home with the customer and they're paying for my time.
Wow.
Being there. In setting up their business networks or things like that.
Nice.
Be honest with them. Tell them there is no 100% solution that new things are discovered all the time. Keep your virus signatures up to date.
Or get them off Windows. Get them off Windows.
Yeah, most of them are going to be on Windows probably. Show them a lot of the good freeware stuff out there, Dr. Web, SpyBot, Search and Destroy, whatever. Teach them how to update stuff. And tell them... the computer is not a hammer. It's not an intuitive tool that does only one thing. It does a lot of things. It's more like learning how to drive a car. There is a learning curve to it, and the more you put into it, the better you're going to be able to use it.
I mean, especially if they're starting from scratch, the learning curve for Ubuntu now is really close to the learning curve for Windows, so you might as well start with Ubuntu.
One of the reasons I do bring this up is with the healthcare reform bill, and I'm sorry to kind of stream into another question, but I think this kind of adds in.
It'll cost you $2 instead of $1. But go ahead.
That's fine.
All right.
with the healthcare reform bill coming up, they're making a move every physician in the United States to electronic record systems, to create a personal health record, like that. And there's a lot of money reasons for this. It comes down to something like $40 trillion in health care, something like that.
Yeah.
And then it's a very large percentage of that is actually spent in record keeping.
Mm-hmm.
It's not used to pay people.
This is a terrible figure I learned recently. Apparently, we spend more money pushing paperwork around in the healthcare industry than the United Kingdom spends in their entire healthcare program.
Wow.
Yeah, their universal healthcare type program.
But, you know, the problem with this is it has a noble goal, but the implementation is going to be on Windows. And this is what scares me. They won't be able to choose other things because it'll be some standard specification that's run that stuff. Yeah. I know, it's horrible.
Okay, kind of related to that question, how do you see biometric security enabling us to be able to lock these records down through encryption and possibly using some sort of a pre-shared key with a let's say, known provider that you can not move the data around but just use your keys around?
You don't want to have a biometric key, though, that involves you to be able to get access to your own health records if you're unconscious.
To be perfectly honest, I really, really want doctors to be able to access my healthcare records
very, very quickly. If I'm in a wreck or something, I want them to be able to find out within seconds my blood type, any allergies, anything like that. So it's, I don't know what the solution is. If I did, I'd be making a lot of money off of it. It's a difficult trade-off between access and security.
Well, actually, just because I don't have the mic. As a profession, I do...
Can I just answer the question about the physical awareness? There is a device. It's from Fujitsu.
There's a device that Fujitsu has actually got on the market. It's been in Japan on the ATM machines. It uses your palm veins. You can be unconscious and you can read your records, but it means that you have the key. It's about you.
And what if your hand gets mangled in the accident?
Well, that's a good point. You got two palms. So there's always a fit. Like anything in hacking, there's a way around it. What I'm just saying is there's always another level. So.
For the biometric stuff, I'll give you an example here from when I worked at Google and all the stuff they've got at eDeltacom. They use a biometric security as well as some of the other stuff to actually get out onto the floor, and thumbprint scanner is one of them. Well, if you know, the technology itself can be great, but if the person who's setting the technology up doesn't set it up very well, you can do things like get stuck at the door and spend literally 5 minutes trying to get the damn thing to read your fingerprint, and the next guy who comes up can take a ballpoint pen and stick it on there, and then he walks right on through. So, you got to make sure that the stuff is implemented well and implemented as the way it was intended to be. And human error, a lot of times that may not happen the way the designers or engineers had planned on.
As a response to the electronic medical records question, I work as an implementer and IT administrator for electronic medical records. And I'm going to keep the system I work with nameless for now for obvious reasons, but it's really a frightening situation because I run into doctors with passwords of 1234.
Yep.
Our servers transmit over HTTP, not HTTPS. They use OpenXML. It's very, very scary. It needs a lot of implementation help.
Why don't they have checks and balances for when they set their passwords? I mean, I'm a web developer, and every time I set up an authentication schema, I have a dictionary that I test passwords against.
Maybe this is kind of naive of me, but if our medical system changes to the point where everyone is guaranteed a basic level of insurance, maybe it won't be that big a deal like it is now, where if your current insurance provider finds out you or ancestors or someone has got something nasty in there, they'll jack up your rates or possibly drop your insurance. If they're not allowed to do that anymore, maybe the reason for keeping some of this information secure or private secret will go away. I don't know. Good question.
Can I make a comment? Can you hear me? You're talking about medical. There's so many other national securities out there. I work in an industry, the power industry, and I'm shocked that it's on the big W, and I'm absolutely flabbergasted. I'm like, you can shut down quite a bit. It's amazing.
Oh, don't say that out loud.
I think there's probably going to have to be some kind of major incident that causes a huge public scandal and outcry before anything.
Extreme measures, but with the dues, the W-dues, you really have to go to the federal measures to make it. And I don't see that Jared would be able to make that secure.
I don't know. Go ahead and try the West Coast. I keep thinking, that reminds me of the Navy Smart Ship program from about 10, 15 years ago, and that was a pretty fantastic failure, and unfortunately the people who approved it in the military weren't particularly technically savvy, and Microsoft had a hell of a lot of money to spend on their slick marketers to sell this technology that failed amazingly to a bunch of fairly non-technical people who believed the marketing folks because, hey, they're from Microsoft. You know, they're the computer guys. They know what they're talking about. I think on the implementation side, you're going to have to make sure you've got people who know their shit before they buy this type of stuff. I don't know.
Scared?
Yeah.
Going back to biometrics for a second, I'm taking a security class. I'm a student for computer science. One in the book, it's this big, thick book, supposed to be pretty popular. I forget the guy's name. He mentions that biometrics are great, but by themselves, you know, okay, if someone, once you crack your biometric key, it's still just a string or a number of some kind. Once you crack that, you can't change it.
Is that security engineering?
Is that the name of the book?
It's a blue book. It's a little bit thicker than that.
I don't remember what color it is.
That sounds about right. Security engineering. I think the guy's name was Scott.
I don't think it's an O'Reilly book, if it's the one I'm thinking of.
No, this is a college textbook. Well, we're using it as a college textbook. It was supposedly the first book of its kind. It's the second edition.
Okay, yeah. If it's the book I'm thinking of, then, yeah, the first edition is available for free online. The guy who wrote it put it up there, and, you know, so the second edition, generate, I guess, viral marketing type stuff.
By Ross Anderson, called Security Engineering from Wiley.
Yes, thank you.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a good book. It's a good book. The first edition is a little bit out of date, but it's good stuff. Yeah. I'm just, you know, if you're using the first edition textbook, well, I'm sorry, you spent a lot of money you didn't need to. Okay, good.
I spent $23 on it.
Oh, okay, that's good. That's good.
Going back to the things being implemented securely, and this is going to be very familiar to anybody who's in the industry, as in formerly employed. Here's the problem. It's not going to happen until people like us educate people enough that they start demanding these things. And the reason it's not going to happen is because whoever, whatever level and whatever company, I'm not going to name any names, somewhere at the top they care about money. And somewhere at the bottom they are told you're going to work 120 hours a week and you're going to make these deadlines, and things fall through the cracks that way. And there's nothing that says that it wasn't a freshman intern that coded whatever login page it was or whatever system it was that doesn't know any better.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and stuff like that is why, no offense, I said fuck the IT industry and I'm going back to school to get a degree in genetics.
Wow.
Human genetics. I'm going to mutate people.
Hack the DNA.
Little change in
computational epigenetics.
Yeah. Woohoo! Little change of track here. Going back to an earlier discussion, how can you protect a home network or small business network? I know that you can't protect it completely from the really good hackers, crackers, but besides having your virus databases updated and using SpyBot, what are your best easily obtainable, fairly cheap ways to protect your home and small business systems?
If you're using any kind of wireless, don't count on any encryption in the wireless to do any good for you. Always use VPNs, even on your home wireless network.
The best advice I can give you, don't be the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
No solution is perfect. Just don't be the guy who's totally wide open. WPA, hide the SSID, do MAC filtering. None of that stuff is 100%, of course, but the average person who's looking around for a network to get into to do whatever on, if the choice is between you and you've implemented these security measures, which aren't 100%, and the guy next to you who's running wide open with a default SSID of Linksys, who do you think they're going to go after?
Linksys is my favorite ISP. They seem to be everywhere. It's fun.
It's kind of like the two guys who were in the woods, and they're being chased by the mountain lion, and the mountain lion stalking them. The one guy starts putting his tennis shoes on. The other guy says, "You're not going to be able to outrun the mountain lion. What are you doing?" He says, "I don't have to outrun the mountain lion. I just have to outrun you."
Bear.
Okay. Yeah. Same thing. You get the idea.
Hi there. I'm not a professional. I just think computers are really cool and I like programming, but. In my case, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing, and I'm wondering, where could I find a Hacking 001?
Whoa.
Are you
That's
local?
Octal. That's mm-hmm. Octal.
Go to the DEFCON 404 meetings.
And how do I find out about those? Where is there a...
Talk to that guy. He'll give you the information. No, seriously, go to the meeting. Newbies welcome. Yeah. Love to teach.
If you want to know, if you are interested in the local DC 404 meetings, go to dc404.com. Chaos, spelled KAOS.TO. That's their website. In fact, here, let me scroll it down.
Just put it up on the EFFM forums website, in fact, as a link.
Here, it's on the bottom of the page here, so way down here past all the snarky comments.
Pant!
Holy crap! It's this one right here. DC404.KAOS.TO. Oh, sorry, I got the gun as well.
Yeah, just get to the meeting first, then they'll tell him all the fun stuff to do. Yeah.
Okay, there are a lot of new viruses that have come out, if you'd even call them that. Have you seen the ones that masquerade as antivirus programs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, I run my own IT business, And I occasionally run into the instance of this virus that basically blocks any executables from running at all. So I can't run Process Explorer to disable it in the background, and or auto runs or anything like that. And it seems to function in safe mode that way also. How would you recommend disabling this so I don't have to reload the
machine? Install Linux.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I'm assuming Windows system. Yeah. Yeah.
He said virus. Come
yeah,
on.
Okay, yeah. Try something like the one of the bootable CDs. I know the Dr. Web antivirus program website. They've got a disk image you can download, and you can boot off that, and you might be able to clean stuff up with that. I've had mixed success with it. And when it works, great. When it doesn't, it's like, well, I hope there wasn't any really, really important data on there that you haven't backed up because it's reformat time.
The data's yep. never an issue.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
A couple points all put together.
We might be able to swing that. We usually get beer. But, yeah.
All right. Single.
Yeah, oh, I've been watching. But, yeah, this isn't my track.
Single malt. Single malt.
I know. Oh, believe me. I will do what I can.
Malt with a hot swappable spare.
Touching on public safety and public, you said power you're working with? I've done installations for 911 systems, and I work for a company. We did SCADA, which manages water. A lot of that stuff, and also at my current company, I'm working with people who are doing that now in a completely different industry. A lot of the people that are doing that are just, they're like, hey, one guy was an auto mechanic I worked with. He had 6 years of auto mechanics. He was programming a SCADA system. You know, we called the manufacturer out. That's how a lot of these things happen. The people I talk to on the phone, you know, I'm introducing them to IP. You know, they've nothing against people with gray hair, but they've got gray hair and they've done nothing with a computer. They just got a computer and they just turned it on, and then they call TechSupport and we're supposed to help them fix their system. And our stuff isn't computer related, but you need your computer as a tool just to talk to it.
Your basic adversary is Microsoft. Yeah. Who's next?
We're going on 8:15. You know that, Ryan?
We got 30 seconds.
Okay, just letting you know.
How much time?
30 seconds.
30 seconds.
Last question.
Might have already been asked, but I don't know if you guys listen to Security Now podcast.
First.
Steve Gibson.
Yeah. I record my podcast right after his, so I have to listen to him all the time. Wait for him to get finished.
So that's pretty good information on there.
What can I say? This is being recorded, isn't it? Darn it.
Just do this.
Yeah, right. No, actually, what I'll say in fairness, because I have gone round and round with Steve on some of his answers. So he does get things wrong occasionally, but he will deal with it in the errata. So hopefully there's always somebody listening to catch the 5 to 10% of the stuff he gets wrong. And it usually does. Usually he responds quickly to the errata. But I have caught him on some real fundamental issues that he should have known. So he's mostly good. He gets a little long-winded on answers. But that, other than that, it is a good podcast to listen to. And by the way, my podcast is Floss Weekly, if you haven't heard that. 50,000 downloads now, so it's definitely serious. Open source. Anybody here listen to Floss Weekly? Woo-hoo! Serious? Oh, I'm cool. All right. Google for Floss Weekly and subscribe there.
By the way, Randall, you're the one who updates the Pearl Announce list. Is that correct?
I moderate CLPA, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's very well done. What Pearl announces, if any of you guys are Pearl hackers, they announce whenever they change a module, they're supposed to go up there and post it and say, hey, I changed this module and I added this new function. I'll go get a new copy. Well, 99% of the time, they never post anything. So Randall wrote this really cool script that goes through and finds when somebody changes something and posts it for them. And an update comes out every day. It's
every
excellent.
Every day, right. Thanks.
So thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Thank
All
you.
Right, we're done. Thank you. Hacker 201.
Do you want to drink tomorrow night? Give till it hurts.
And Hacking 201 is not any fun until the next day you can't remember that cool hack that they told you about. So
give me your preferences when you come up.